Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Hello, welcome back to Sox and Jocks. I'm talking about Andrew on the board. Andrew Beck from Las Vegas. He's now become kind of a mafioso out there. He was staying at the Flamingo. He went to see the room where they shot Mo Green and everything else, right?
I actually didn't see that. No. I'm actually not even aware who that is. You care to share?
He was the guy. Mo Green was the... that was his real name. He was the guy from New York. They actually started the strip. He started the Flamingo, the New York mob.
He was Bugsy.
Bugsy...
Siegel.
Yeah, Bugsy Siegel.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, S&P futures are...
You know Mo Green. Have you seen The Godfather?
Have I?
No, I know you have.
Yeah.
I've seen Casino, I've seen Goodfellas, and I love those movies. I've never seen The Godfather.
I've never seen The Godfather.
Nope.
This is an age group thing. There is nobody in Tom's in my age group who has not seen The Godfather about 63 times.
Yeah.
And there is hardly anybody in your age group, and I find this from the classroom when I want to use Godfather quotes in class or Godfather clips in class, who has seen it at all. But there are three Godfathers. There's Godfather Part One, Godfather, The Godfather Part Two, and The Godfather Part Three. If I were to pick my top five movies ever, Godfather One and Two would be in there. Godfather 3, don't watch it. It sucks.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Oh, by the way, S&P futures are down 80. NASDAQ futures are down 214. We just had a dump down here. And it's the only, I think it's the only set of movies ever, Kevin, where the same person in the movie has two best acting awards with two different people. Where, what's his name, got a... Marlon Brando got it for Godfather 1. And who got it for Godfather? It was Robert De Niro got it for Godfather 2, right?
Yeah, playing the same character?
Playing the same character.
Yeah, but I'm trying to remember if De Niro get, because he wasn't a huge part in the movie. He was a very important part. But it was really about, Godfather 2, of course, was more about Michael Corleone. But they did a lot of flashbacks.
It might have been a supporting because the flashbacks were really long. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing in Sicily and all the other stuff, all the scenes with was the guy Fanucci when he blasted Fanucci.
Killed Don Fanucci. Yep.
Yeah, who really wasn't much of a Don. He was kind of a fake Don. But I like this. I like his outfit, the big white coat walking around. Where you couldn't big huge
totally
guy with a white coat. You couldn't miss him.
Total stylish. Yes.
Oh yeah, but I'm really surprised that my mother gives me the book and says you got to read this. So the first 40 pages were essentially how big Sonny's thing was, right? I'm sitting there. My mother gave me this book. Oh, my God,
thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Bob. But none of that was in the movie. The one part in the wedding scene where his wife starts talking about how big he was in a. But there was all kinds of other stuff. I mean, the book is fantastic. I mean, the movie is very close to the book, but still, the book has a whole bunch of other stuff in there. It's pretty cool. The time frame was what? It was the 40s and 50s, right? In the 30s, depression coming out of depression, and I think it was pretty spot on. The guy who wrote it said he'd go to dinner, and the mob guys would come up to and talk to him, and they'd like say hello. They thought he was actually in the mob. He was so close to the stuff. But anyway, it was interesting.
At any rate, have you, Andrew, have you seen Breaking Bad? Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, I was just rewatching that one a little while ago.
Okay. Well, in many ways, it's the same story. In other words, you get the story of Michael Corleone, you know, kind of young and idealistic, and just gets pulled into it. You know, in his case, it's the family business, and he was supposed to become you know, the war hero who became Senator Corleone or Governor Corleone or something like that. But it's that same story of you watch the guy move from idealistic into the very, very hardened criminal that you saw in Breaking Bad. So, you know, it's really good acting in it, and I highly recommend it. If you need something to watch on a really rainy day or a miserable day, just get yourself the first two Godfather movies and watch them back to back.
Well, I mean, you can go back to like Greek tragedy, and there's only what, five plots basically, five or six. Guy gets girl, guy doesn't get girl, somebody shoots somebody. But the theme of what was that crazy TV thing that Audrey and every female on earth was watching with the biker gang, where everybody walked with their shoulders and swing like 5 feet each time they took a step because they're all big hunks. What the hell was the name of that movie? Or it was on for like 3 or 4 years. It was a where the guy, the kid always wanted to be out of the biker gang, and he kept getting drawn back in. Same thing. Exact same plot.
I thought I was out. They pulled me back in.
Yeah, I mean, because he wanted to leave.
There's your one quote from Godfather 3. Now you definitely don't need to see it.
Oh, I don't think I ever saw it. I heard it was bad, and I never saw it. Godfather 3.
No, it's the just when they pulled, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was a, it was a big biker gang out in L.A. Whatever it was. And there was a girlfriend who got out, and then the mother kept trying to go get the girlfriend because she wanted to be a nurse, and said, "You can't leave. You're still one of us." It was all through. The people kept trying to leave, and couldn't they come back? And whatever. But the guy, the star, was like some, you know, super sexy dude. So everybody loved him, kind of thing. But me, speaking of sexy, nobody likes the market here, Ken. We're down another 70 points this morning, and to listen to the take on TV of everybody. It really is something when you talk about, you know, the Sons of Anarchy was the thing. Remember that?
That was going to be my guess, but I could not remember the name.
Yeah. But you know, this is, and to get people's read of this, you can sure tell everybody's agenda, Kevin, when you listen to them talk. But I remember Tom Selleck on Blue Bloods when it was, well, just it's not on anymore, but I said when you, over the age of 18, you can tell somebody's agenda the minute they open their mouth. There's people yesterday just talking about the market, and it's stunning how you can go back into history. One guy was talking about, you know, 7 or 8 dates that, you know, I remember. I mean, I remember when he was spieling them off. The market was down this on this crisis, and we came back, and 6 months later it was way higher. And just the way you got to look at this, you got to, you know, send me more money, and I'll charge you 1.5% to throw it in the market, and hopefully it goes up, and you know, that kind of crap. Then you get other people that are a little worried, and then you get other people that are, you know, trying to take the you know, economic route to this, and then there's, and I trying to listen to all of it and make a feel out of it, and this is not like long-term capital or anything like that. Now, it doesn't mean the market's not going to come back. I sure as hell can't quote that, but this isn't like that. This isn't like a week from now it's going to be fixed. And the people that get this idea that somehow or another the pressure is going to hit and the guy's going to call it all off, I think he's in too deep for that. So I don't see that happening. So
I don't see that happening either. And, you know, I do think that the one take that, you know, looked at it from, you know, that you have to look at this as a piece of a plan rather than something that stands alone. I think that's an interesting take, and that it, you know, the next step obviously is getting a budget bill through Congress, and that one's interesting because the Senate's version of it as it stands now isn't close in terms of the amount of expending cuts that are in there. It just isn't even close to what the House has passed. So they'll have to figure out that reconciliation piece of it and make that work. But if you look at it, you know, and you say, well, we have to look at that. We also have to look at the amount of debt that has to reprice very soon. And it's going to reprice a lot more favorably if interest rates are low.
But they've gone up straight up the last week.
I understand. Well, actually, you know, weren't the 10-year rates down at least right away?
They were down for like a day or two. If you locked in a mortgage maybe last Wednesday, you might have got a good deal, but it's been straight up since maybe Thursday or Friday.
We'll see what Powell does with that, you know, what his next announcement looks like. And so that's, you know, that is presumably a piece of it. And then you also have to look at the idea that they're, you know, as they've gone through and started to identify opportunities to reduce spending, if they're going to actually follow through on it, because that's an important piece of any kind of package that has you know, revenue cuts, has any kind of tax cuts. And then, you know, obviously in the end game, whether the manufacturing comes back or not, and whether they're able to negotiate reasonable trade deals, there's a whole lot that has to fall in place here. Hey, if it does, great. I'll stand up and salute that, but I'm not predicting it because I don't know.
I
think it's a risky gambit.
I think it's not, to me. The more I try, first of all, it's so difficult to go through 80 countries and try and figure out where they got their numbers. I've done a few, and I don't have access to the stuff those guys have, but people have access to stuff. I mean, yesterday Hal went through some long dissertation about how much beef we get from Australia and how screwed up that is. We have a massive trade surplus with Australia. We don't have a deficit with them. We have a surplus.
Yeah, and at the same time, you do have what was the quote I heard yesterday from some beef industry spokesman? You know, we can't sell a single cheeseburger in Australia because we're completely blocked out. Our beef markets are completely blocked out there.
Well, we have
everybody has a beef.
Well, without a doubt, the point being is, we have a massive, we sell them almost $800 billion worth of military equipment every year. The U.S. goods exports to Australia in 2024 were $34.6 billion, up 3.1%. U.S. goods imported from Australia totaled $16.7 billion. It's not even close.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's, I don't understand. I mean, you have this. There's a couple things, and I kind of went through them this week a couple times, but I don't have a blackboard. Of course, nobody has a blackboard anymore. But there's several things in this mess, Kevin. At least a couple of them that I don't quite get. I mean, I really think, you know, I don't know what is going through his mind. But I listened to a thing yesterday from David Letterman when Trump was on there in 1988, talking about countries are screwing us because we have a deficit. I think the man has no concept of really what he's talking about. A simple question of if you and I like to eat, you know, red bananas or something, pick some stupid thing. There's only one country in the world on some remote island that we can get red bananas, and we just buy them from them. And now they have some dollars. Now they're going to use the dollars someplace. They might buy stuff from us. They might buy oil somewhere else. Somehow or other, the dollar works its way around. But are they, by Trump's definition, they're by definition screwing us, are they? We're buying their bananas. How are they screwing us exactly?
Well, all I can, you know, the only thing I can tell you is that it's worth your time to listen to some of these very, very lengthy interviews. You know, hour-long interview, like the hour-long interview that I sent you with Bessent yesterday. And because one of the things that you will find out of this administration is whether you think they're lying to you or not, fine. Whether you agree or disagree with their policies or not, fine. But man, are they available to explain what they're doing for anybody who wants to know.
Anybody so, who had saw, they won't come out here.
That anybody who doesn't sit down and listen to those just doesn't want to know.
They're trying to back their way into like a bad trade in baseball. I guess what I'm saying is, Kevin, unless
so you did listen to it, and that's your conclusion.
No, I don't want. If I talk to him, I'd like to talk to him. I want to ask him the questions I want to ask him.
But at the end, you're not going to get to do that. So unless we get Scott Best on the podcast, in which case I'll gladly yield my time. But in the meantime, you can sit down and listen to him for an hour, and you might hear some of the questions you want asked. And they're not softball questions, and they get follow-up questions. So I'm just telling you that if you don't want to listen to that, fine. But that tells me you don't want to know.
You and I have one basic disagreement on this whole mess. We agree on just about everything. But over the course of you being on the show, there's a very basic disagreement. One is you look at what somebody maybe seems to have said or has actually written. And I look at, since I've been doing this for a long time, it's not what you say, it's what people hear. It's a combination of body language and everything else. We have a guy who's telling us that any single trade deficit has highway robbery and we're getting screwed. And I'm telling you that's not true.
Okay.
And I don't care how you couch it. The other is, there's a principle in economics, and I'm sure you know this from way back when you trundled over to class at Notre Dame. There's a principle called comparative advantage. Or even if you have a beef industry, they maybe have an advantage in that particular. Even if every single one, let's say there's two farms next to each other producing kind of the same thing, and one guy is just better at everything than the other guy and does it cheaper. The one thing the other guy is best at, even though maybe he's not as good as you, it probably makes sense for you to buy that from him at a higher price, because then you can turn around and use those resources for the stuff you're really better at. So if you don't understand those two principles, and if you think every single trade imbalance is a screw job, you're going to come up with a policy like this one. And, you know, Tom, I
get that. But then if you put a quota on beef imports as an example and say you ain't getting any into the country, then comparative advantage is not a concept that applies.
Well, it obviously, they're not going that way anyway, but I looked at the South Korea stuff, and again, this is on the internet, this is AI, who the hell knows if AI is any good. The list of import quotas to Vietnam, it looks the same as ours. We have them on sugar, we got them on dairy products, we got them on steel, we got them on aluminum. And oh, by the way, I agree with the part that we have a quota on steel. I don't want us to have no steel plant when we supposedly have an army and a navy. I'm with them on that. Be it Trump, be it Biden, whoever the hell it is. I understand that we need to protect some steel here, some aluminum here, some forestry here. And I understand how Japan doesn't want to be able to not feed themselves, so they somehow prop up their rice farmers, even though our rice farmers could probably blow them away, or the Vietnam guys could. But I understand why people do that. It doesn't make them a crook, does it?
Doesn't make them a crook. But on the other hand, if you were to actually listen to what the Secretary of I want to make sure I get his title right, the Treasury says, he's saying, yeah, we'd like to make them all go away, ours and theirs.
We had a free trade agreement.
In many cases, there will be industries that you want to protect, and he was pretty specific about that. Said, but, you know, we want to make them go away, ours and theirs.
So, we had that with Mexico and Canada. We have a free trade agreement.
We had an agreement.
We had a free trade agreement between us and Canada and Mexico.
We had the North American Free Trade Agreement. Then we signed the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. So we took out the words free trade. And but yeah, we did have an agreement. And I can't tell you if it.
Well, Trump signed it.
Don't interrupt me. I can't tell you it because I really haven't spent any time on it. I can't tell you if that agreement was better, worse, or about the same. My gut feeling is about the same, except that we threw in that all that COVID nonsense somewhere in there, which probably makes it hard to evaluate. But it also included the ability to reopen it after a few years, so that's where we are now. So I don't know if it was better, if it was freer, or if it was just different. I don't know what to tell you about that.
My whole complaint on this whole thing, and I actually wanted to ask you what this one guy was talking about yesterday regarding Apple. And by the way, anybody wonders why the market turned around yesterday, Apple was up, traded 190. And it turned around during the day as everybody was talking. Maybe, I don't know if they were just listening, watching TV or what. It closed at like 172. Kevin, it's $18 at 15 billion shares outstanding. Good Lord. I mean, that's something. And so these guys were all talking about Apple. And I was doing some work on Apple last night. not on an Apple machine, but I was digging. They have 14,000 employees over according to this thing anyway, they have 14,000 employees in China. But they have 1.5 million people, allegedly, that are in their distribution, 1.5 million other people in the distribution system in China. I don't think the people are being treated like they'd be treated here, and all that. And I understand how this, you know, idea that I don't want to just, what did the guy say on Saturday Night Live, Michael Che? He goes, how do you tell somebody 12 years old they're laid off? Interesting line, huh? I guess you do, huh? But, I don't like that situation at all, because I think China is very much a special case. But there was a guy there talking about, you can't be naive and say you're going to throw a tariff on there and all of a sudden you're going to make, he goes, that's a 20-year build-out those guys have in China. And Foxconn is by far their biggest. What do they do? They do the screens or something. What does Foxconn do for them? I have no idea.
Among other things, yeah, they probably do the video screens.
Because the build out is like 20 years. It's not a question of a stop to the White House and because they've been doing this for it should, you know, would it be nice if some of it was done here, the stuff that isn't polluting and all that kind of stuff. But you're not talking about something's going to happen. Because right now, all you've got is a massive tax increase for U.S. citizens. Is all you got. And soon to be replaced, evidently, with a drop down in the progressive income tax. So at the end of the day, whatever plan these guys are telling you, Kevin, somehow on the back burner, we're going to end up with a tax system here that's 15 to 20% progressive and the rest regressive. Is that where you want to go?
Me personally?
Yeah.
No, but I would like to see the tax system simplified, but that's a whole different discussion.
Well, it's simplified because people take advantage of it.
Very worthwhile discussion.
But I mean, you're the supply chain guy. What if you totally shut off Apple in China? How many years are we talking about? And how the hell are you even do it?
Well, let me put it this way, because I actually do know a little bit about that, and there are a whole lot of companies that for several years already have been executing an out-of-China strategy. So a lot of that is well down the road, and there's a lot of people who have exited completely, and there are others who are partway out, and that they're rebuilding them. So you have a lot of that. You have, let me see, who was the CEO, I think it was for Byrna, said, yeah, we, you know, as soon as we saw Trump was going to win, we started moving our stuff out, you know, our stuff home. And he said, and we ain't the only ones, so there's a lot of people doing that. And I think that's part of what we're seeing locally where I am, where there are people that have been adding on, you know, second shifts and ramping up production here because they saw what was coming. So there are some people who are out front. There are some factories here that have excess capacity that have been running, you know, maybe one shift, so it's pretty easy for them to get up and running. Just the up and running part. Forget the supply chain part of it for a moment and just say, you know, what's up and running? Because if you have the facility to do more here, then it's just a matter of can you hire the people and get, you know, get a shift up and running, which doesn't take nearly as long as having to build a building, acquire the manufacturing equipment, and so on. So there's a lot of moving pieces to this, some of which, like you said, will take a long time to ramp up, and other stuff that can happen pretty quickly and can and is and has been happening pretty quickly.
Well, the issue I dug through with the Canada, because I've gone through a few of the countries, and, you know, Carl was all over sending us the stuff about, you know, Chrysler says it costs 38% more up there to assemble a car, or less up there to assemble a car. Of course, AI, of all things, AI has it way more expensive up there, so I'm not so sure about this AI thing. So I dug through a bunch of five other sites.
It's depending on which, what are you doing? Are you using, like, ChatGPT or something like that?
I don't know what it is. Anyway, it's
a good, really fast search engine, but you have to check its work.
I basically dug through, and one of the things I think one of our most common themes among people that don't agree on a lot of stuff is that the biggest fix here needs to be in the medical area. And the funny thing is Carl drove me to this check out the Canada thing because of the Stellaris. Not Stellaris. What is it? What's the name? Is it
Stellantis?
I came up with virtually the entire difference in cost between assembling a car or a truck up in Canada and here, is that here you got to pay people's massive amounts of health insurance, and there it's already covered. That's essentially the total difference, Kevin.
Yeah, except that already covered means it's on a different line item on your books, the expense, because somebody's paying for the expense.
Well, but I don't think Ford is. That's the point. Or Stellantis.
Well, it's whatever taxes they pay to Canada, it's in there somewhere.
Well, I get it, but I'm saying that's, and the idea of assembling a car or truck is somewhere between 19 and 35 hours. So if you're paying somebody, you know, $60 an hour here all in and 45 up there, you're talking about $300 a car, which isn't near enough to bring it across the bridge. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, because now it depends on now where's the engine made, where's the transmission made, where's all that stuff. But these guys are not, they're not the plant is no longer a manufacturing plant, it's an assembly plant. It's not Ford Dearborn, it's not Pullman when they had 65 buildings, when they did the seats, they did the upholstery, they did the castings. It's not like that anymore. You either buy this stuff from yourself, basically, at another plant, or that's the one thing you were talking about with the Belvedere plant. That was the first just-in-time inventory auto plant ever built, wasn't it? I think it was.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was their shtick, was it? And even then, and you eloquently, by the way, a few times have said, well, that's fine, but you can't do it every single day because you can't shut the plant down if it snows and the tire guy can't get there that day. So there has to be some stuff that goes in inventory. And imagine you did a couple shows where you talked all about that. And how you identify...
A little just in case.
Yeah, I mean, how do you identify that? Now, does that mean you need other buildings where you store the crap, which defeats the whole purpose? Does that mean you got to have guys going back and forth with forklifts, which again defeats all purpose?
No. More likely, what's going to happen is you have an inventory queue, potentially with say an extra day's inventory or 2 days worth of inventory. So instead of taking in just today's on the receiving dock, you're taking it in, but you also have a safety stock in your place. It's just not much. It's not what traditionally would have been done.
But it also comes down to, if you're a real theorist on this, it's where is it? Do you have three days worth of tires on the floor? Is it 3 days worth of tires on the floor, or 2 days in a building a half a mile away where if you get in trouble, you got to run them over there? It sort of defeats the purpose. Yeah, you can't have everything on the trading floor, on the manufacturing floor either, right? So I mean, it's
right. No, you don't want all that sitting as work in process, because that has its own problems, most likely to hide quality issues. But yeah, you would have a certain amount of stock that you keep. And look, anybody who's sourcing in China or overseas is doing that anyway, because whatever else you think you're doing with just in time, You do not go to China and just order because of the long lead times to get there. You're ordering, you know, now you're back in the old economic order quantity world, and you're not doing just in time because you can't do just in time like that because there's too much variability in your supply chain. Instead, then you throw in things like, you know, what happens for Chinese New Year? I mean, they're pretty much shut down for February. So yeah. How do you deal with that in a just-in-time world? You don't. Anybody who's sourcing a lot of parts overseas is not doing just-in-time.
Kevin, yeah, what are you...
Maybe some variant of it. Maybe some way that they can minimize it. Maybe some way that they can have a supplier who stocks it, but somewhere in the supply chain, somebody is holding the bag on the just-in-time model.
Let's kind of shift gears here a hair. And the market? Well, again, this is my livelihood. It's not Kevin's.
Well, market stuff for Russell, but I do want to shift gears. But I'd rather talk about where China is in all of this.
Okay, but let me just a real quick one though, Kevin. Is it? And this is my biggest. Well, one of my biggest complaints about if the administration were to come out to me, Kevin, or you, or everybody, not just me, and say, we've got a problem with these five countries, and here's why. And by the way, that thing that the president put up in the Oval Office, his big chart, the chart should have been four columns. Instead, it's two. And they totally lied to you on the first column, or withheld information. I won't say lie. I just did say lie. But so I like to dig sort of into the detail, but some... My question on the
I know you can watch one of those long interviews and get the full explanation.
Well, they're not going to give it to me because anyway. But I'm looking at this.
Good.
Like,
don't tell me they're not going to if you haven't looked at it.
Well, okay, you got Apple. You're right. Apple did some moving when Trump got back in. For the last 3 or 4 years, maybe the last 5 years, maybe even eight, they've been moving out of China into Vietnam, and we just stuck Vietnam with a 90% tariff. Why do you think Apple's on its ass, for God's sake?
Anyway. In part because we've known all of... Is there any element of this that we know, we've been talking forever on this show about how overvalued so many of these tech stocks are and how their multiples are trading? Is there some element in there of people looking at this and going... My God, if you know, maybe there's an element in here of them being overvalued, and they're never going back to where they were.
Well, it's kind of
weird. I heard somebody talking about that on Maria Bartiromo's show this morning.
Talking
about their multiples and saying, you know, geez, NVIDIA might be down. I don't know if he was talking NVIDIA. He was talking about one of the tech sites. So they're down to 20 times earnings, and the market usually trades around 19. So for that industry, so they really aren't too far off of where they're supposed to be.
I get
it was kind of an interesting thing to hear because I've been listening to you say that, you know, talk about their trading multiples for a long time.
Some of the multiples are huge, but I guess what I'm asking is how much further do we have to go, or are we already there in the market when you're going to see universities saying, hey, look what happened to our fund here. Maybe we don't really want to pay this basketball player $3 million. I mean, I'm looking at, we had, this is kind of near and dear to me because we've had several clients over the years that have had concentrated issues in UPS. Everybody knows UPS. That's what I'm saying, Kevin. The more, every one of these things is a specific problem. Every one of these countries that those guys put out on that list is different. It's a specific problem. It's like a client of mine. Every one is different. Some people probably are screwing us. Some people aren't. There's this blanket every single time. I think that's all a lie. Anyway, but I was looking. This UPS, we had a client a few years ago, dropped us a whole bunch of UPS. The stock was, I think it was 208 when it got here. And the client was, you know, sick and... And for a while, somebody else was running the account, or brother, and the stock just got nothing but go straight down. Now it probably was down $80 while it was here, and I'm saying we made 55 of it back by being protected. You know, it wasn't all of it. We can't protect all of it. And all of a sudden, she dies. There's a fight in the will. the kids decide they don't want to protect it anymore. 2 days later, after we pulled the puts off, the thing was down like $40 on an earnings thing. So there's a self-inflicted wound, huh? Well, now today, the reason why I mention UPS is if you ever have a relative or whatever, now clearly they're all over the Chicago area here. They got a bunch of distribution centers. Their pension plan, like Bear Stearns was, is virtually, their 401k plan is virtually all UPS stock. It's their pension plan is almost all UPS stock. So when you leave there, and I've had several clients like that over the last however many years, you basically leave in those days with $1 million to $2 million worth of UPS stock. And you can't sell it while you're there, or they put like a target on your back because you're not a non-believer. But these people all have this massive concentration issue in UPS stock. Well, now today, the stock is like $90. So we're talking about people you don't even know seriously wounded over the last 3 or 4 years in some of these stocks that are just getting destroyed. You know, maybe it's a change in how people do business. Maybe it's Amazon, whatever it is. I'm saying when this stuff goes down like this, Apple is, we've done, for a couple of firms, we've done subcontract work for the, where I do protected programs. By the way, we do a hell of a lot more than protected programs, but somehow or another, I've gotten a name for that. Well, maybe because we have our trademark protected index program, but the some of these stocks,
Kevin, because every ad we run is about
Well, but it it doesn't mean if you just want me to be long, I can't be long for you. I mean, that's easy. The protected but it is so difficult, Kevin, to keep your eye on this stuff. I mean, Apple was the single biggest holding in every place I've ever worked. I've never even talked to about doing some of my stuff. The second probably is NVIDIA, because all these people watch CNBC all day. But Apple was no longer a stock. It was a life-changing experience for pretty much anybody who bought it when Steve Jobs came back. There were people who bought 1,000 shares of Apple at, what, $5 or something? And it, and then now, and then it was, you know, 200 and some. And by the way, it probably split a lot. I can't remember if it split, but they pay a dividend, some. I mean, it was a life-changing experience for a lot of people. They own Apple. And now Apple has gone from 2-something-something down to 168. And yesterday, like I said, it traded 190 yesterday. When a stock has 15 billion shares out, how many shares of Apple do you think Notre Dame owns?
I couldn't begin to guess.
I bet it's a bleep load. And by the way, if you own any QQQ, those seven stocks make up what, 55% of the QQQ. Even if you don't think you own it, you own it. I mean, I'm not saying it deserved to be 220, but the one I think is, you know, I don't give investment advice. The one maybe you can help me on this. The one I think is still kind of crazily overpriced in terms of revenue per share is Microsoft. It's still like 10 times, you know, the revenue per share is like $35. It's trading $350. How does Microsoft double, for God's sake, as big as they are? And one that's really scary, unless you're a Bitcoin believer, is this MicroStrategy. Their revenue is like $2 a share. And the thing's trading a 234, but they own all the Bitcoin, right? I mean, there's some holes out here still if this doesn't get any better. I just think everybody's convinced. Kevin, some of the stuff, the trades that, you know, we missed, everybody, even us. I mean, I'm not immune to this. The idea that somehow or another, you know, Trump could change his mind and pull a bunch of the countries off the list and get a big relief rally here. We have been very careful to not have any risk to the upside. I mean, to the point where, you know, the QQQs are trading, well, now they're down another $7. Was trading 415 yesterday. We were nervous about selling the 450 calls, for God's sake. And they're trading like a buck. This is insanity how much. I mean, the VIX today is up to 57. If you tell people, hey, if somebody dumped all their stock on me today because they now all of a sudden decide they want it insured, it's like Dave Murphy trying to get fire insurance when he can see the fire. I mean, this is really screwing this up. You know, and I don't know that it all has to be done this way, do you? I mean, even if their goals are the right goals, I think it could be done a lot easier and better. I don't know if you have to shock Vietnam with 90%. When the most I can even come, I can even justify is probably 15. I mean, I don't know. But
a couple of thoughts on that, because I think that this is where China looks kind of interesting. Part one of China is how much of this is really aimed at China, at hitting them. Because if we just look at them standalone and say, where are they? Well, you know, Xi might want to fight back, but he really is not in a position at this point, given the state of their economy, not in much of a position to slow down economic activity in his country, because they really count on employment as a means of, you know, keeping their population under control. So he's, you know, they have that particular issue, and they must deal with it. So that's a piece of the equation for China. On the other hand, if he capitulates, that's a different problem. He's going to look weak, and while he may be supreme leader for life, he's supreme leader for life as long as the people who around him and the people who have power in China are willing to keep him as supreme leader for life. So I think he's in an area where he's really got to be careful how he navigates all of this. Part two is, if this is really, let's just say that this idea that 70 countries are already knocking on the door and they want to redo some agreements, and let's just say that's all true, and things might happen pretty quickly with some of them. How much of this is to steer better trade agreements that are going to steer more business away from China and into other countries, especially Far Eastern countries? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think that's a question worth exploring, because this, you know, this may be a way of just kneecapping China in general. Why not just
put the tariff on China? Let the chips fall.
They went heavy on it.
Well, yeah, but Vietnam is now higher than.
But you all, if you also want to bring, let's take Vietnam as an example, because Vietnam has been a source of diversion away from China in the past. That if you really want to get a good favorable trade agreement with Vietnam, and you do, and you and as a result, you. You start doing more and more with Vietnam, that's not good for China either.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the list.
I'm not saying that's what's happening, because this I don't know. I'm just throwing out there that China is in an interesting situation right now. It will be very interesting to see how well they navigate it or not, how well they do or don't navigate this, because it can be very perilous for them as well. And I don't know if perilous for China is a good thing or a bad thing, because a China that is in trouble might be more inclined to make a move against Taiwan.
Well, China is, according to this chart, 67%. All right, and when the time the chart was put on again, the 67%.
Now they're threatening to do more. Back to the United States, and then, you know, this turns into spy versus spy.
Well, this is the column where they purposely put it, in my opinion, on TV where you couldn't read the fine print. Tariffs charged to the USA, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. But here's my issue with this, Kevin. If this is a China issue, okay, 90% Vietnam, 64% Taiwan, which is bizarre. 52% India, 72% Thailand, 64% Indonesia, 97% Cambodia. So if you just wanted to spank China, why wouldn't you leave everybody else's down?
You would do that if you want better agreements with everybody else, with your alternatives.
But even the Canada thing, and again, I'm trying not to. My criticism is, I think it's not very well thought out. And if you look at different numbers, in Canada, we have this trade deficit with Canada, right? I don't think we have a current account deficit, which is what I would be looking at. But, you know, just as a guess, the difference in sizes of the two countries, are going to end up giving you that if they have raw materials, which we want, which they do, mostly timber and other stuff. Now, and they have oil, which, because we consume more here than we drill for, even though people say we don't, and we, so we import oil from Canada. You know, the average American buys 1,500 or $1,600 worth of stuff every year from Canada. You might say, gee, that's a bleep load. The average Canadian buys $9,500 worth of stuff from the U.S. So, again, explain to me, Secretary of the Treasury, how they're screwing us.
Well, I can't, but...
Yeah, I'm saying it depends on what you look at, Kevin.
Again, I can speculate with you, Tom, that, you know, we can sort of play the game. The question may be that, you know, maybe they're more dependent on commerce with the U.S. than the U.S. is dependent on commerce with them, and therefore you use that opportunity to... to squeeze them. I don't know.
I'll bet you 20 times more Canadians vacation here, Disney World, places like that, than people here go up there. And on a per capita basis.
Well, you're probably right. In the summer, you get a lot of people that go, you know, fishing up there, but okay.
Yeah, but how, if I catch a fish, most of it's catch and release. I don't even get to bring the guy back. Have you ever gone up to...
There you have it. There's the basis for the trade agreement. You get to bring your fish back from now on.
You know, I went through customs to Canada in a canoe. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
My brother Dan, in addition of other talents he has, being president of PTI Securities, Marist High School had a deal where they guys went up, you know, it was always a brother or two accompany, and so it was chaperoned. They would go up and spend 4 or 5 days up in Boundary Waters canoe area, and so Dan went like 2 years in a row. He loved it, and he was actually going to become a guide up there for one summer, and then he ended up getting a decent job down there and didn't do it. But he became a pretty expert canoeist to the point where he was doing these 30-mile races on Sundays and stuff. And being a canoe guy, it's pretty hard if you're the guy, especially if you're the guy in the back and you got to keep the thing straight. Anyway, so he talks. Me and remember Bill Donovan, he talks the two of us to go up there canoeing, and I had never done anything like this, right? And I'm sitting there, I had never spent a night in a tent, I'd never been in a canoe, and I'm thinking, all right, I'll go, I guess. And Bill's like, yeah, I guess we'll go. So up we go. You put in on the American side, you get your canoe, and you paddle up, and you go through, there's a portage. The portage is into Canada. And they come by, and the weird part was, we went so early, it was right after we got out of school at Notre Dame. We go up there, and the guy goes, him and his wife, the people who ran the, what do you want to call it, the trading post and the border crossing, were a guy and his wife that had been doing it forever. What are you guys doing here? Well, we're going canoeing. The guy says the ice is a little bit off the water for like a week. It's pretty cold. I go, oh, oops. Anyway, so they charge us duties on our dried eggs and all the other crap we had. It was like $10 worth of duties. The salami and garbage we brought up there to eat. So there were duties then, right? And we got to get a guy $10 cash for our awful dry. Every dried egg's got to be awful. And we got to make our trip. Remember Starks?
I have a definition of camping that goes like this. Camping is when you stay at a motel that doesn't have a restaurant.
But it has to have the thing you put in the quarter for the bed vibrates.
Well, one way or the other, I don't care about that. That ain't that's just, you know, whether you're staying at a luxury motel or not. I have no interest in camping, no interest in sleeping on the ground, or any of that kind of stuff. Some people love it. I don't.
I made it through, but those two mopes, they could sleep through a thunderstorm. I'm there asleep.
Oh, I can too. Remember, I raised a drummer, so I take naps through all kinds of noise
in
the basement.
If it's 2 a.m. and some woodpecker 2 miles away starts whacking, I'm wide awake. Like any kind of noise, I'm sitting there. What am I doing? So Dan goes, "We'll canoe. Yeah, we'll do 30 miles the first day and 7 portages." And I'm going, "Okay." No portage. You got to put all that crap. You got to carry it
in the boat. Yep.
Including the canoe, and you carry the damn thing, you know, half a mile over like kind of rough terrain, and put in seven of them. So we're canoeing about, I don't know how far we're going. My arm's ready to fall off, and I was in good shape. And by the way, how far are we going out of the 30? He goes, almost a mile. I'm going, well, actually, Kevin, after a couple of days, you learn to turn your body and use your legs to where you basically can canoe all day long. It didn't take long to where you got the hang of it, to where you literally could canoe all day long. Even though the first day, if you pull on your bicep, you're good for about a half a mile before your bicep caves. But after that, yeah. Anyway, but the water is so clear. If you want to, no motors allowed on the Canadian side at all. So if you wanted water, you just reached over and grabbed some of the lake and threw it in your mouth. It was that, you know, there wasn't
clean enough to do that.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. Anyway, but so I mean, we didn't get to see much of Canada. All we saw were a couple of fish because we weren't very good at catching them. But anyway, you know, Canada has some interesting stuff. But it's not like we didn't spend as much as if they went to Disneyland. Let's put it that way. I just want to see all the detail. The market's down enough, Kevin. People are wounded enough. I don't want to go any further. It doesn't look like it's stopping here. We're down 91. We're down 267.
I understand that. I know what you do for a living. So, yeah, I totally get your perspective on this. My last comment, and we should actually talk a little sports, I think, just to lighten up the mood here.
We're not going to do that when we talk about the guys that got killed in the crash in the Dominican Republic last night.
That was a damn shame. Yeah. Apparently, Octavio Dotel was a very popular guy. That, you know, people who knew him absolutely loved him. But you know, my summary comment on all of this is that there's a tendency, and we do this with a lot of people we don't like or that we consider enemies overseas, and I know a lot of people look at Trump and the Trump administration the same way, but there's a tendency to think that there is no thought behind this and that they don't know what they're doing and this is just all so random and so on. And you know, what I've been trying to do today is just to throw out, you know, the idea that maybe they have thought about this some, and maybe there is a process. You may not like it, and I think there are lots of opportunities for us if we want to go see what the thought process is, but to just assume that it's just lunacy, is just random, I think is a mistake. I just don't, you know, I think you have to you have to at least consider the possibility some kind of plan being executed here, because I think there is.
I think you think there is, and I hope there is, but here's my and then we'll shove over the sports for a bit. The issue I have, Kevin, is going back, the guy for 40 years his thought that every single trade deficit has been a ripoff. I heard him say a 1988 interview last night.
Yeah. There's certainly a consistency of thought here.
And you know what? It's just not true. Maybe the guy should have gone to economics class and said where hell he was doing. But it's just not true. In some cases, I think it could be very true. And these guys have more access to information than I do. If they were to pick China, I'm with you on buy. There's probably three or four other countries here that I don't know about that absolutely do everything they possibly can to screw us. My thought would be, let's start with the five. It maybe is an example to the rest to never do it or something. But when you start taking the same sledgehammer approach, Bangladesh is not China. I mean, I think if you and I were to dig through Bangladesh, 74%? I mean, what do they even do? What do they make? T-shirts? I mean, the people here.
Would you do a gradual approach if you thought you had exactly 2 years to just completely reshape everything because of impending economic disaster?
I'm saying there's countries here that he can't even define what they do. Switzerland doesn't have a tariff. They're down here at 61%.
I hear what you're saying, Tom, and I'm not saying you have to agree. What I am suggesting, though, is you know, we've talked a lot on this show about different scenarios where our debt is just unsustainable, and that we are really looking at some ticking time bombs in here. And if you want to deal with them, because we haven't dealt with them, we've been so irresponsible for so many decades. So at this point, if the only way to do it is to say, let's let's just take, you know, let's take our medicine now and then, you know, try and, you know, and then recover from that, then okay, that would be an approach. I don't know, I'm not saying it's a good approach, the right approach, that anything that, you know, that it should be that way, but I am telling you that that appears to be the approach, that we're just going to do whatever it takes, take our medicine now, hope to God we can survive the midterm elections, start to see some results out of this, all of this, by the midterm elections, and then just keep going, and try and operate with less debt, and try and operate with you know, a much more balanced approach to how we operate the government, and take out a lot of cost and all that. And if we, hey, if he can do that in a couple of years' time, or even in 4 years' time, he'll be considered probably the most consequential president of the last 100 years.
Okay, but on day one, which I guess is today, on day one, what are we doing? We've dropped an incredibly large regressive tax on our people, telling them that other people are paying it, which is wrong. To a certain extent, they might pay a little bit of it. I could probably work through the math, but the person he's lying to probably can't. You could probably work through the math that maybe, you know, Apple will eat some of this because they have to drop the price of the phone so it doesn't actually go up 67%. You and I could work through the math on a blackboard. That's not who he's talking to. He's talking to morons that actually believe, because he said it, that the other people are paying this tax, even though they go by and try and buy a Ford next week, it's up $20,000. And people are dumb enough to believe him, unfortunately. The fact is...
Has he also said there is going to be some pain, but we have to endure the pain to get past it?
Kevin, if you walk to work every week, the same day down State Street, and I say, Kevin, every day I'm going to walk out and kick you in the ass, I guess I let you know, but it still isn't a good thing, is it?
Well.
But I let you know, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm saying, right now, if, today...
On the other hand, you came out and said, I'm going to make you take this medicine, and if you keep taking it, you're going to okay.
But they're not taking the medicine. We are.
Okay. And who's they and who's we?
I mean, the guy who's buying the Ford is paying. He's taking the medicine. The bananas, the red bananas that you and I like, I don't know if there are such a thing as red bananas, and it is now 25% or 60% or 80% higher from some island, that's all they sell us. We're paying it. They're not.
Do you think Ford is going to completely absorb all those tariffs? Pass them on to...
That's my point. I'm saying every single one of these is separate. It's like a client. Every single one is separate and different. This incredible shotgun approach across the entire world is absolutely insane to me. Yet I'll agree with you 100% on some places.
And I understand you think that way, and that's a valid point. I'm not telling you not to think that way, or you shouldn't think that way. But you brought up Ford. I mean, Ford's probably the least of your issues, because Ford has the market power to be able to say, we ain't paying this, and we're not eating it. You better lower your prices, supplier.
Maybe.
Oh, more than maybe. They will. Anybody who's big does that. And you know, whether they split it 50-50, a lot of companies will do that of significant size, but not, you know, not Ford size. And a lot others might say, well, 90-10, we'll take 10% of it. But Ford's not jacking. They're not going to be one of the ones that suffers the tariff.
I have a feeling they will be, to a certain extent. That's what I'm saying. Every single one, Kevin, you and I could look at the Ford situation. Where do they make this truck? Where do they make that truck? Some Mexico, some here. You and I could go through, and with 5 hours' work, could probably come up with a pretty reasonable estimate on Ford's, basically on who's dropping prices, who's doing this, transfer pricing, how they adjust the transfer pricing. I mean, there's a million variables to every product, every country, and basically every company. These guys didn't do that, is my point. Every time I look at one place or another, I find inconsistencies.
You don't have any evidence that they did that, but you're assuming they didn't do it. And that's why that goes back to the point I just made, is, you know, you're assuming that they don't do the work, because we like to assume that the people, when we don't approve of people, that they're just a bunch of knaves.
I think that Trump is not Adlai Stevenson. It's going to do a big paper and show you what he's thinking in public.
There you have it. That's exactly the point I'm making, is you assume that they just don't know what they're doing.
I didn't say that. I think he thinks that this is a... He thinks that every time there's a trade imbalance, we're getting screwed. He's thought it for 40 years. Okay, I happen to think that in some cases he's probably right, in most cases he's probably wrong. And I don't think he knows the difference between the two. Who cares?
Yeah, well...
And the idea of putting a massive tax on people, hoping that it all comes back together 5 years from now, if they would have raised taxes...
Obviously, very risky, and quite possibly will just blow up in his face.
Well, but if there's also the element of credibility gap in here. If he were to triple the Social Security and Medicare tax tomorrow, you couldn't blame it on somebody else or say you're not paying it, because nobody's dumb enough to buy that one. It appears we have an awful lot of people that are dumb enough to think other people are going to pay these tariffs and not them, because he said so.
And yeah, it's product by product.
Yeah. Anyway, we got we got to do some. Hey, the Cubs are.
Russell's on, and
he can here.
He can pile in. I felt bad. I liked that. He pitched for the Sox. I liked him. Not that it matters whether I liked him or not. The poor guy. How would you like to be in a club and a roof fall?
Who, Dotel or Russell?
Well, I like Russell too, but he didn't pitch for the Sox.
But he did not pitch for the Sox.
He didn't even pitch last year.
He could have. I don't. This year they're a little bit better pitching staff, but last year he probably could have.
He didn't even pitch for our softball team. Russell, did you ever pitch in softball at least?
I never pitched in softball. Pitched in Little League.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So,
were you a flamethrower?
I don't really know what happened with my. I know what happened with my baseball career. I started working at a minor league park in the summers instead of playing baseball.
Playing catch with those guys.
Yeah, I was playing catch with those guys. I learned a lot from those guys. I went on road trips, and I was 12 and 13 years old and roomed with a player.
Hey, speaking of which, did you guys see the YouTube as I was going through to find stuff on tariffs? There was a small college game, Kevin, and after one pitch was a forfeit. Do you see that?
Well, what happened?
The pitcher goes in, warms up, wings the ball in. The third base umpire said, hey, you forgot to put this guy on the 27-man roster. And they called the game. Everybody just walked off. It was a forfeit. He pitched one pitch. Wow. I never heard of that. Have you?
Well, in college, there actually are, because I saw... the Notre Dame women had to add a few players through the course of the season, so they had some volleyball player and another player who had started working with them as a practice player. When they added them to the roster, there's like a process that takes, I don't know, like it's a 10-day process from when you notify that you're adding someone to the roster to when it happens. So there is a procedure for it in the NCAA, and I believe everybody is supposed to know how it works.
I would have guessed.
Nobody follows NCAA rules. They just go to a judge and say, that's not fair, and then they play.
I would have guessed.
That's a problem with the NCAA, is any rules they have, people just, if they don't like them, they go to court.
Well, I would have guessed after one pitch, you would have given the guy first base, told him to bring in a new pitcher, and played on. And not send everybody in the stands home. That's kind of odd. Right? I mean, but how many times, Kevin, did we go to a softball field, know there was a ringer on the other team? We didn't call attention to it. We wanted to play. And if we beat him with the ringer there, it was even better, wouldn't it?
Well, it was, and that was always fun. I will say this, kind of the ultimate was Evanston always, I assume they still have it, had a fall league, a fall softball league that ran through September and probably with championships spilled into October. And that was the way that could work, because they had lights, so they would play like 6, 7:30, and maybe a 9 o'clock game, So there's all this activity going on, and all you had to do was show up with your stuff, and you could play all night because they were always needing players for the fall league. You know, all these teams sign up, but not everybody is as available as they are all summer. So they, you know, they have short players, and they just start saying, "Who's here? Hey, you doing anything? You want to play?"
We had a 1 year. We won it 1 year. They had a really good fall league in LaGrange. They had terrific fields, great lighting, until they screwed them all up. They moved all the fields, the lights weren't where they were. Anyway, but the 1 year, it was a doubleheader league, started at 6:15. We never didn't make it to kickoff of Monday Night Football. I mean, just chop-chop. You just played two games and you were out of there. And the league was a really good league, and one team was like almost like an all-star team of their summer guys. And they were really good. But I put together a pretty good squad, and by the time the year was over, we were stacked, just stacked. And we had to beat these guys 2 out of 3 in the playoffs, and we did on a night where all of a sudden it started to snow. They were so pissed off. But we had Dr. J's cousin, who used to try out for the Twins every year, played left field, and he could have been the best ball player we've ever played with. Mikey Suarez, who played tackle for Illinois, 6'5", played short center. Guy could run like the wind and hit the ball a mile. We were just loaded. These guys didn't know where the hell we came from. It was great. They were so pissed off when they lost, which made us even happier, right? And we made it to our sponsor place and watched kickoff, Monday Night Football. But how could life be better, Kevin?
I think it would be, that would sound like a good thing to do at a certain age.
better than watching the market go down, huh?
Yeah, much better.
All right, so before we get to Russell,
myself cleaned up and head out. Give us
1 minute and where do we have to go market-wise, wealth-wise in this country to where a lot of the stuff we talk about, paying $5 billion for basketball teams, paying, you know, kids in high school $1 million to go to some college or whatever, when does that get affected, if ever?
I think it's effective when it's not profitable, I guess. I suppose if you're counting on a bunch of wealthy donors who have just lost their shirts in the market, maybe they won't be donating so much this time around.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out when that happens. You know, when is a tipping point for people? It's hard to say. Again, it's very individual, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I sent you that thing about how the Duke program works.
Yeah, you know, I have a chance to see that. I'm going to listen to that, though, because...
I mean, there's nothing untoward about it. They just, you know, they want to operate quietly, but they want to make sure that Shire has everything he needs to be able to recruit the best players. And so it's, you know, it's done without a lot of flash or anything like that, but they're all about, you know, funding it, and it's, you know, there's a really tight... kind of tightly controlled group of donors behind it. And this week, that tightly controlled group of donors might not be feeling so flush.
Well, I would do it if it was me and wanted to say, can you stay clean in a mud hole? Best way to do it would be the sponsors of the team, be it Nike, be it whoever, for them to pay the players. Because that way you are sort of away with it. They get to use everybody in commercials, like the Notre Dame girls. Like
I know Notre Dame's athletic department has this thing they call Team Notre Dame, and it is all their local sponsors, you know, local businesses and so on that are involved. And to some extent, they get some national ads. So, you know, if you look at Cooper Flagg and how many national commercials he's doing right now, that's not what the Duke, you know, that Duke group is funding. They're just funding basically salaries. In the ideal world, it would all be, hey, what endorsements can you get? And they all certainly do get their endorsements, in many cases local, in many cases national. But, it's such a hodgepodge now.
It is. What I'm saying is my preference would be, and we're going to lose you, my preference would be, instead of me paying Sonia Citron, I want to get her involved in a State Farm commercial, which I think she's in, and they pay her.
Yeah, and they do.
Yeah.
They do, but then, you know, I pay them too. I pay them, I being the school.
Yeah, I try and minimize that if it was me. But, again, you might not be able to do that. Anyway, Kevin, we'll talk to you on Friday. Russell, do you know where your puts are?
My puts are deep in the money. Where are your puts?
Very deep.
Yeah. Now, I'm actually pretty darn close to closing those suppers out. How's that?
Well, you know what? We
I think we're closer to the bottom. That's pretty easy to say as well. But, it feels like we're trying to find a bottom in here. I think about 49.15 would be a 20% retracement, and that's when all your buddies on CNBC will get excited about we're now in a bear market, and then we'll see how long it lasts. And I actually think that that the bounces that we got, especially the bounce that we got yesterday, intraday on Monday, we were down over 20%. And I think a lot of people saw the market start to work its way higher and thought they missed it. The missed it trade worked for about 2 hours, but I do think there was a FOMO of buying on weakness, and people aren't happy that they fell for that one.
Russell, somebody asked the question a couple days ago. We got a tweet question about, you know, what's your experience been on stuff like this, and it's always, and I can name one of them was long-term cap. There's been a bunch of times in the last 25 years, just from memory, that we've had the market basically get its ass kicked for a couple of days, and usually the morning of the third day, if it turns around that morning, it sort of means that there's a long-term capital situation. There's some sort of a half-assed solution, whether or not it's a solution. Something you can put your fingers on is what the number really is of whatever carnage took place someplace, and then you can sort of build from that. And usually the third day is when it happens, and it sort of happened like that this time as well, on Monday.
I wonder if there is a liquidation going on out there, because and it did feel a bit like that. But also I just know that several hedge funds have been struggling for the first quarter this year.
Yeah.
So it's not like they were coming from a position of strength, and if they happen to be, you know, too long, for lack of a better way to put it, going into last year, they were too long this time last week. And I do want to talk about the price action leading up to the announcement, because I do think a piece of it was leaked.
Oh God.
And I think it's why we held up.
It's actually one of the Kevin says, you can sort of tell I don't like this administration.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say the single biggest reason for that is I think they're front running the hell out of the market. People close to these people.
So let me get to that one, but it did feel like a liquidation when we got, you know, any sort of strength whatsoever. Even just the past couple of days, it's felt like that. And I do know that the first quarter was pretty tough for some hedge funds. So they may have to raise cash for redemptions, et cetera. If last Friday were the 31st, I think everything would be a lot worse.
But
you see what far as the calendar goes.
I guess the message I'm trying to deliver clumsily here, obviously, is all these other times that you and I, between the two of us, we probably think a ton of them. All these other times, at the end of two or three days, even if it's a crap solution, there's some sort of a quote solution of some kind. All right, our long-term capital got their ass kicked, but here's the number. Here's who's eating it, and by the way, we can kind of go forward from here. It wasn't like things were fixed or. But there was some sort of a recognition that we could value the problem at the end of two or three days and cause the market. And all these, I'll say, buffoons on TV yesterday were talking about, they picked all these little bear markets, these sell-offs, and said every single one of them, they just, you know, you can go back in history, and depending on your agenda, you can find history items that agreed with you, right? I mean, duh. So their point is... I'm a long way of getting there. Long story short, don't tell it. I don't think this has even started yet.
Yeah, and that's where I'm going. You and I are going to agree on this, and I love it when I have these little brain things that's like, man, you know, this is what's different about this one this time. And whenever you hear, I think I probably just lost a third of our audience when I said it's different this time. But when I explain why I think it's different this time, I think a lot of people are gonna be, yeah, and that's why the amount of uncertainty we're dealing with is gonna be stretched out. And the reason it's different this time is we are in a trade war. And when you go to your generals and you talk about, well, we're gonna go invade XYZ, one of the questions should be, okay, what does victory look like? We don't know what victory looks like at all. And I, you know, part of it's by design. So, you know, if he says, I want us to have no tariffs with everybody, period, and we never get to that point, well, then he failed. So, and either party would say, either party would approach it that way. But we don't know. I know what the end game is, kind of in a very large macro way, which is to level the playing field a bit, basically have some semblance of free trade. And right now we kind of, you know, especially with respect to China, without all of this going on, is on its heels. This is like a knockout punch to them, and this is a knockout punch, you know, they've been reeling since the start of COVID, and they really have never recovered.
Well, explain to me this. If we're zeroed in on China, and we know all about China. You're not going to get me to defend those guys. What is the purpose when Trump's first term, he pretty much put the screws to China, and despite what he says, Biden pretty much did the same thing, maybe even worse. I mean,
I don't think Biden covered it up.
No,
I just don't think I don't think that he, much like. And you guys were talking about Apple moving their stuff. Much like Apple quietly moving facilities to Vietnam and India, and not making a big stink about it because they didn't want to make the Chinese mad at them, and suddenly cut off their market, et cetera, and cut off their production facilities, or do things to make life very difficult for them within China. But they were quietly doing that. I mean, I think the Biden administration knew that those were the right things to do. They didn't want to give their predecessor any credit whatsoever. But it's not like they tried to hide it. They just left it there and didn't make a huge thing about it.
All right. So we just like with Kevin, we've got China. Maybe there's three or four other places that actively do their best to screw us. And I'm not saying that there aren't.
Well, I think every country.
Okay, so why are we?
That's the nature of business.
But why are we dropping? I think the thing that's torpedoing Apple to a certain extent, you know, the rate now for Vietnam is higher than China.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
It can't be because the China number.
China number is 67%.
No, it's 104.
Okay, but Vietnam, that's as of
midnight last night. It went to 104.
All right, but that's of the last couple of days. When the chart came out, it was 67% China, 90 Vietnam.
And that's the piece of information that I think got leaked and why the stock market was holding up. They were like, "Oh, this isn't going to be as aggressive." And when he was making I watched the market real time, and I watched the whole announcement real time. And when he said, you know, that when they announced what the China one was going to be, we did rally for a minute. For a very brief minute. So I think, I feel like that piece of information about China was leaked out there. I feel like the whole thing, and you keep bringing up, you know, why are they doing this to Taiwan? I think the whole idea is they want to bring everybody to the table. And they are bringing everybody to the table.
Well, in their mind.
Talking about these situations, they said 50 over the weekend, and we don't know if it's true or not, but over the weekend they said about, you know, that 50 countries had reached out to them to do this. And that is understandable.
But wanting to talk is one thing. I think, well, you know what, I can't help my impressions. We're talking about somebody who wants somebody to come kiss his ass. And
But
I mean, I guess
come kiss the ring, and
I'm a nut job on when I see 90% charged to the U.S. from Vietnam, and I look up in five places, and it looks like they're charging 9.4%. I want to know where the other 81 came from.
Well, it's a formula, and there's a PDF out there that you can get from the government that explains how they came up with these numbers.
If there is, please send that to me, because
they basically showed it and put the link up when they were doing the announcement.
Okay, so Switzerland.
And the formula is based on our trade deficit. That was the idea.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The whole starting point of this is, he thinks every single time there's a trade deficit, we're getting screwed. And that just absolutely is not true.
No, it's not true.
That's your starting point, how do you get to reality if your starting point's that bad?
Well, hopefully, hopefully both sides start to reduce some of their tariffs.
Well, I mean,
are charging tariffs on us as well.
Hal went through a whole routine yesterday on how much beef we get from Australia. And now somehow or another, they don't want us sending beef there. I don't know if that's true or not, but let's just say it is. We have a massive surplus with Australia. Not a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that the way trade is supposed to work? They have a comparative advantage in beef. We get the beef. By the way, we sell them fighter jets. Duh.
We sell them submarines as well.
Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? Nobody's screwing anybody, I don't think.
Well, I don't know that, I have not looked at the specifics of Australia, but if you want to, and I don't, honestly, I don't care that much about how the formula was resolved. I feel like in a lot of ways, our country has been going down a bad path, and I'm very hopeful we've had the same jokers in there forever, regardless of which party it is. I am more than willing to see how something different works out.
Okay, but
we were on a path that basically was going to take us to becoming insolvent and probably having a currency devaluation and having a third world country type situation occur. We were on an untenable path for a lot of reasons.
I'm not into any solution that's different. I'm actually forming a pretty serious opinion on this and what we're actually accomplishing. And what I think we're accomplishing is somewhere around a $600 billion, probably won't be that high, as people adjust prices on their end and maybe do take a little bit of a hit on their end. I think we're talking about a $500 to $600 billion incredibly regressive tax that you just put on a population that's too stupid to realize that that's what you just did to them. How many people do you think Trumpers are convinced that this tax can be paid for by China and Vietnam and not them? You could never do that by raising payroll taxes five times because people aren't that stupid. But doing it this way and saying the other guy's the one that's hurting when they're not. Maybe a little bit, but tomorrow, when that thing comes across the border and the tax comes in, it's the importer, the U.S. importer, that writes that check, correct? I don't think, what percentage of the population here, what percentage of the Trumpers could write down on a piece of paper that's how that works?
Oh, I doubt. I mean, I doubt most of them could. I doubt most of them could on either side.
Yeah, I've been saying, but this is...
And what I find really funny is I you see a lot of social media stuff where I voted for Trump, I didn't vote for this stuff. BS. Nobody, they made some announcements. The stock market went down 10%, which was overdue to happen. And, it hasn't hit anybody's pocketbook yet. So any of the outrage that I see right now is just, it's the other side acting like they're on the Republican side.
Well, yesterday, Apple traded 190. Today it's 169. And I thought it was overvalued at 220 or something. Now it's 169. But yesterday, the spin was $21 times 15 billion shares outstanding. You can't say nobody's getting hurt, Russell.
Well, the people that are getting hurt owned an overvalued stock, in my mind.
I'm sort of with you on that, but
I mean, really, I mean, was the valuation of any of these Magnificent Sevens really justified? So anybody that made a fortune off of NVIDIA, were they just lucky that they caught a stock at a moment where the FOMO took over and the fundamentals, you know, were not being properly priced by the stock?
I don't have any issue with stuff going back to value, but
yeah.
I just went through, I'm not going to do it again, what Kevin was on, about how many people, the money that I've managed through the years, that have UPS stock, because that's what they, is in their retirement plan, is their own stock. Well, I had a client when the stock came in here, it was 208, now it's 90. That's people's retirement numbers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of companies, I mean, to say that there's no, and this is my, Hal was on, Hal, brilliant economist. Nobody outside of our industry knows. To most people, you buy a stock at 80, it goes to 110. You don't sell it; it goes back to 80. So what? No harm, no foul, right? But you and I know better, because the amount of buying power you have increases as it goes up, and a lot of people, and we'll say most, a lot of people use that money to buy more stuff. The fact that Apple might have, somebody might have bought it at 10, and I think Apple stock, unlike, if I could pick a company my entire life, if I could pick mm-hmm. a company that was a life-changing experience for more investors, it's Apple. A real lot of, I would call regular investors, bought Apple when it was $5, $10, $15 and still have. Yeah. Was a life-changing experience for them in terms of wealth. Now, should they have sold some up top? Sure. Would I have recommended that? Would I have recommended some puts to protect it? Yes. They didn't do any of that. But but I'm going to say, I doubt if their account nowhere along the line at PTI or Merrill Lynch or whatever it is, there wasn't some kind of margin loan to buy a car, to buy more stock, to buy Bitcoin, for God's sake. We've had people take out margin loans here to buy Bitcoin. I don't even want to hear it, but it's their money. They can mm-hmm. do what they want. The thought that somebody just rode that all the way from 10 to 220 without any sort of borrowing against it for something else, that's why you and I know that if a stock goes from 100 to 200 and back to 100, it should be even. It's never even. You lose more on the way down than you made on the way up.
Yeah.
But people outside our industry don't know that. That's the danger with pumping a market up and having it come down. It shouldn't make any difference, but it does. Right?
Right.
So that's why the Fed should never pump crap up like they did. They should never inflate the economy, because it.
Yeah, they should support the economy. They shouldn't inflate it.
Yeah, and when you inflate it, it's
they have a job, and they should just do that job instead of try to do everything else.
By the way, what do you think their reaction is going to be to all this? Trump's already.
I think they're just letting it play itself out.
Yeah, but do you think they're going to start getting some pretty serious pressure a couple more days of market like this?
They've already got pressure. The number of cuts this year that were priced in this time last week was like 2 or 3. Now it's 5.
Are you watching?
But the big difference here is, whenever that's happened, the stock market's liked it. And the stock market don't like it. It's one of those, the reaction is completely different than it's been for probably a year, where the rate cuts look like they may be coming soon. In fact, yesterday, there was a time, late Sunday, early Monday, where they were pricing in a 75% chance that we're going to get a cut in early May, and that hadn't been priced in at all.
Well, we're going to do a break here, Russell. I'm sure you'll pay attention to the part when I get to the 30, the 30-year rate is almost 5 now. So people...
Yeah! Lock that in!
Well, the Fed can lower all they want on the front end, but the world now is convinced that there's going to be inflation down the pipe with this stuff, and nobody's going to lend people money at 3% for 10 years if they think these things are all going to go through. Why would you? S&P Futures now down 102, NASDAQ Futures down 308. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I am also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, that song never had more meaning. Something happening here where it isn't exactly clear. SP Futures down 103, NASDAQ Futures down 314. This is an incredible turnaround from yesterday's high. We were up a bunch. We've spun around 700 points in the Qs. Dow Futures are down 923. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 848, 4%, 19,432. They were comfortably over 20,000. FTSE down 282, 3.6%. CAC around down 289, 4%. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei down 1,200 points. That's 3.9%. Hang Seng actually is bouncing up a little bit. Up a 136.7%, 20,246. Shanghai up 41. That's 1.3%. I can say I'm kind of surprised on that. We'll get Russell to comment on that. Yesterday, we were up, and then all of a sudden we weren't. Dow was down 320. S&P up 79. NASDAQ was up 335. And I think they were up close to 300, so they did about a 700-point spin. Really something to see. Bonds, here's what you have to keep your eye on. The 10-year is up 19 ticks, 4.45. The bonds are just absolutely getting hammered here. Oil is another one here, down 366, 55.92. Sorry, Donald, you're not going to drill baby drill at that price. It ain't happening. Brent down 371, 59.11. Natural gas down 8 cents, 338. Gold. And the other way. Now, it was up almost as much yesterday. It's up $78, $3,068, and closed almost unchanged. But now it's given another run at it today. Silver up 58 cents, 30.27. Copper up a penny. We've got the dollar is getting hammered. The euro is up to 110, and the pound is up to 128. More to the euro than the dollar. And the yuan has fallen to 2007 lows as the China stuff kicks in. So this stuff is all over the place moving. Crypto down 5, is Bitcoin down 570, but still pretty much hanging in there at 76,000. I'd say it's hanging in there better than the market at this point. What do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports. Cubs win.
All right, yes, they do. And White Sox lose. It is 7:37 here in Chicago on April 9th. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it for sports. The Cubs won over the Rangers 10-6, and the Sox lost to the Guardians 0-1. For Chicago weather, it's going to be pretty calm this week, at least. Sorry, it's going to be pretty calm today. We're at 36 degrees. It's going to be a cool one. We might have a bit of rain throughout the afternoon. We're going to have a high of 46. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 63 degrees. It's going to be blazing sunshine and hot. Possible danger of dehydration and stroke while doing strenuous activities. So look out for that. A high of 98. And finally, for Chicago traffic, things are heavy if you're coming both inbound or outbound on the north side. But there are no major accidents to report. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, is there any place in the technical world here, with all this news flying back and forth, is there any place in the technical world you can look at a chart and say, here's the spot? I mean, we had a couple people on, well, the same people. Somebody said, 5,000 in the S&P futures, and they're 49.14. I think, was it Kenny said some people were talking 4,500. I don't know, somewhere along the line, there needs to be some sort of a declaration that this is it can't be in flux. If your goal is to get people to bring manufacturing back here, you and I are not going to the bank today to get a loan for a plant if we think the guy's going to turn it around if people come and kiss the mistletoe. How can we do that?
No, you're definitely going to see some slowing economic activity based on, you know, the uncertainty that we're dealing with. And that's going to work its way through the stock market. You know, we start earnings Friday morning. We get three of the big banks Friday morning. So I think if you're trying to come up, if you're trying to formulate a bottom in all of this, the best thing that you want to do is listen to what they say on the corporate earnings calls.
Well, you know, Jamie Dimon
around this, how's it going to impact coming year, and how are they, you know, and you know, what does it look like? You think the S&P 500 is going to make?
My clairvoyant friend here,
and then you can put a valuation on it. But for right now, before you get that, for right now, what you really have to kind of fixate on is the 20% down correction thing that everybody always focuses on, because a lot of people just pay attention to that level. If we break through that, then I guess you just have to try to go back a bit and come up with some sort of support somewhere, and then
kind of losing you here.
But going into this year, the forward Shiller PE was at a level that to end 2024 that we've never had the stock market positive over the next 10 years once we had that valuation. So stocks were expensive.
By the way, you're very
clear. They still have a lot more to fall.
You're very clairvoyant. Your buddy Jamie Dimon just came out and said a recession is likely outcome. So he's already talking. Why do you think a lot of the sell-off in Europe, not a lot, but first couple days was being led by banks? Where's the bank's risk in all this? I mean, other than just general, I mean, stuff. Are you there?
No, I'm sorry. I'm outside and an ambulance went by and I could barely hear you.
I mean, say what? Why? It seemed like in Europe, and again, you know, it changes by the minute, literally. But the first couple of days, it seems like the banks were leading the way down. Why do you think other than just being general things of the economy, why do you think banks have an issue here? Right? Just people not being able to pay their credit. I mean, where is their issue?
You know, that's something I want to hear from these guys on Friday, and I was questioning the same thing, and I don't have a good answer for it. It does seem like the banks are getting hit. You know, maybe just because they do so much international commerce-wise, I don't really know. Maybe U.S. banks, large multinational companies, are going to stop doing business with them because they're pissed off at the U.S. You know, I've been scratching my head over that one as well. I'm not really sure why it's been like
where's
that.
What do you think is – I have to – the formula I'm going with here, because I try and get back to – formulas instead of just shooting from my ass like maybe half the politicians in the world on both sides of the aisle. Your rates are supposed to be, and I think you teach this in class, the 10-year rate is supposed to be the addition of the real rate of interest, what you're actually charging somebody to use your stuff, meaning your money, or are you paying them for their stuff, their money. It should be that plus your idea of what inflation is going to be like. If the violin,
it's inflation plus what you want to make over inflation.
Yeah, if I lend Russell $100 for a year, the risk-free rate is usually, the real rate is usually 2.5-3, which goes back centuries. And then if we think there's going to be a 10% inflation, guess what? I want 113 back from Russell. I want my 3% interest. And oh, by the way, the dollar is worth 10% less. I want that too. We're racketing up in these 10 and 30 years. What do you think people's inflationary expectations are if all of a sudden people have to pay all these taxes?
Nobody's paying attention to it right now, which gives me a lot of concern for the CPI tomorrow. I feel like inflation has kind of fallen by the wayside because it's been under control for the last few months. But like you said, you know, you say the Trumpers don't realize what's going to happen here. I think a lot of people are aware that some of this disruption is going to result in a little bit of inflation for a while.
Or are you? I'm not gonna,
I mean, I'm well aware that we're going to go through some pain.
Well, whenever somebody says that, even you, and I know it, as a professor, the first thing you would say if you were in class in a blackboard refinery, you'd say, let me take that back. Let me go through who exactly the we is.
Yeah.
Because the we never seem to take pain evenly, do we? I mean...
No. And I don't, you know... We can make all kinds of projections as to you know, what the actual impact of this is going to have. But, you know, you may have... We may have a situation where prices don't rise as much as people expect because the sourcing shifts around based on the tariffs. So if you're... The price of something you're importing suddenly is going to double from China, but you can get the same thing for a little bit less than what it would cost from China, then you're not totally passing on the whole tariff thing. And honestly, I think the tariffs are going to create a behavioral change among consumers. We're going to stop buying so much crap that we don't need. And I'm okay with that as well.
Well, what did Fred Sanford play? One man's treasure is another man's junk?
Yeah.
Well, okay, but whatever we're doing, it's all a question of whose axe is being gored, right? And
yeah.
And a tariff to me, I mean, by the way, I would love to, if you wanted me to someday. I actually did a huge take-home test paper. I keep telling people this, on tariffs, and I don't think it was Milton Friedman, it was somebody else. Where it was the simplest thing on earth, Russell. I mean, simplest tariff there is. And you know what? That's my argument with Kevin and all the people that want to see this play out and think that the administration actually has thought more through it than I do. My mentality is basically, because I remember doing this friggin' paper, and it was something simple. We put a 20% tariff on Mercedes cars. At the time, Mercedes came here fully assembled. Okay, so there was no back and forth with the transmissions. Nothing complicated like that. Nothing about the transmissions, the engines, and the seats all came from Germany, but it was assembled in Knoxville. There was none of that. It was all simple as can be. Yet it wasn't simple, because if you put a 10,000-hour, say the Mercedes cost $50,000 and Cadillacs cost $30,000 at the time. So you put a 10,000-hour tariff on the Mercedes, right? Now, theoretically, it should just go to 60. Okay, but it's probably not going to go to 60 because Mercedes may say, wait a minute, we just blew our competitive advantage. And I'll say this to Trump. They will probably cut their price $3,000-$4,000. It could be anything. That's the point. It's so complicated. They may say, okay, we're cutting our price $4,000. We're going to eat some of this. So now the price is not 60. The price is now 56. So now the tariff actually drops down from $10,000 to whatever rate you had on it to, say, $9,500 or something. So the tariff now drops. Now, now Cadillac could say, wow, we have an empty plant. Instead of being $10,000 cheaper than the Mercedes or whatever it was, whatever I said, we're now 15 or 16. Let's work a second shift and sell more Cadillacs than we ever sold before. That could be an outcome. Or they may say, wait a minute, the normal spread between a Cadillac and a Mercedes is 10, and everybody's sort of happy with that. We can sneak our price up $4,000 or $5,000, maybe sell a couple of more Cadillacs, and we're way the bleep ahead. So you may end up with not only Mercedes going up, but Cadillacs and everything else going up. So you don't know where you're going to land, and that's one product.
And that's the thing, is we don't freaking know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my attitude about this, is I really want to see the whole thing play out instead of, you know, getting all up in arms with what could happen. I've spent half of my life worrying about what could happen, and I want all that rent back from what could happen from my brain.
Yeah, but okay, but except, you know, one thing we know is going to happen.
No, I'm being serious here. I think it's very, and the thing is, if it really does start to work to our benefit, I don't think anybody's going to give them credit for it.
Well, okay, but I keep trying to make the same point. What we know is going to happen is if a blow-up swimming pool is coming over from China and you're buying it for your grandkids, which you don't have any yet.
We don't know what's going to happen.
But we do. We know.
We're negotiating this stuff.
Okay.
We don't know what the outcome is going to be yet. We're negotiating this stuff.
I'm trying to be simple here.
The outcome is if everything, you know, if we continue to have 100% tariff on China, but if you know, if we come to the table and we end up with a, okay, an across the board 10% for to pay for our customs and everything else, but we don't know the final numbers on any of these. They're in the middle of a negotiation on all of this.
Okay, I'm saying the only
thing there'll be countries that we can get stuff from that are going to agree to, you know, work with us better than China, and then China's just going to basically implode. It's going to implode with or without this. It's just going to happen a little faster.
Do you realize how difficult you're making it for me to agree with you?
I know.
But okay, but you got to give me this one. You got to give me this softball down the middle. Right now, today, if a swimming pool comes in from China at $100, the importer is going to have to send $104 to Trump.
Yeah.
That we know. You're right. Yeah. It may not last. It may end up being 50. It may end up being 10. It may end up being zero. But right now, today, we know Russell is paying $104. And that thing is now, it won't be 204 because China will eat a little bit and somebody here will eat a little bit. But you're probably going to pay 180, my guess.
Or you're going to get it from somewhere else.
Or you're going to get, well, you can't get them from Vietnam. They're 90.
Well, then you know what? Then you don't need a pool.
Okay, well,
a lot of this is discretionary stuff.
Okay.
You know, it's not like we're all going to start starving. Yeah.
Well, one of my crazy habits, instead of, you know, going to the gym, I like to do, but just to relax myself, I go and look. I check out prices of old trucks on the internet. Why I do that, I have no friggin' idea. I'm going to say, Russ, in anticipation of this, if Russell goes to buy a new Ford pickup, and he goes, "What the bleep? I don't need it." Okay. Now, that means that your old Ford pickup truck is not on the market. It means maybe you got to go to the mechanic and his business gets better. Or maybe me looking for a used Ford pickup. I'm going to say the price of the stuff that I look at, because the guy in the building, the engineer in the building was looking for a pickup truck. So I say, hey, I like looking for pickup trucks. I'm going to say that they're up 25% on the older models that are in halfway decent shape in the last 6 months. It already, you can't just say let's wait, because the amount of hurt we've already put on new vehicles has impacted this car market. Matter of fact, I'll tell you what, Russell, if I had any brains, was still in school, there's a huge doctoral thesis, at least one, on the auto industry in the last 8 years. The COVID and stuff and everything else, supply chain, and what it's done to used cars versus new cars, what it's done to mechanics' salaries. I had to get my truck tested. I went to a place, Russell, I must have had 80 cars there with two mechanics, or three. I mean, it's overwhelming. Try and get in a body shop and not have to wait a month. It is in a used car. If a thing runs, boy, for a decent price, grab it. It is absolutely worked. It's not about waiting for somebody to come to the White House and either kiss or not kiss somebody's ass in a deal for a year from now. It's already there. People are already anticipating it.
Yeah, there is some of that. But again, I don't know. We don't know what the final outcome of this thing is going to be. We really don't. You know, it's just, and I do think that it's something that needed to be done. You know, we were on a bad path as far as, you know, how much debt the country's taken on. You know, and then also how much, you know, we're buying from overseas relative to what we're sending overseas.
We
basically owe people in China for the crap that we buy, because they own our debt.
Well, you know, I'm going to run this one by you, because I think, maybe because of Carl and Hal, they think I don't listen to them, but I sure as hell do, and you as well. Our hole here, China's a problem. You and I have talked about that for as long as we've been doing the show together, and maybe before. That's a problem. Let's leave those guys as an outlier. Our single biggest hole here is in medical stuff. People spending way too much for stuff that other people. As a matter of fact, Carl or somebody was all over about how Canada's screwing us because it's cheaper to make a car up there. and I did about an hour's worth of research, and I pretty much pinpointed that the difference between the auto assemblers pay there versus all-in pay versus here is the incredible amount it costs us for medical insurance here, where it's already paid for up there. The difference in the $50 or $60 an hour here all in, and the $45 up there is virtually all the health insurance, which has nothing to do with actually putting a car together, does it? These are systematic things, and the reason why, well, I'm going to say, if PTI could ever raise their prices, which our industry can't, if we did, it would be to cover health insurance, not to give people a raise. I mean, I don't think we have any real... that's the single biggest hole in our country in the last 25 years, is people spending $1,000 for a fatso shot, or, you know, whatever, it's diabetes too, and I shouldn't say just fatso, for an overweight shot that costs them $5 to make. And until we find a way to fix that, or Kenny, I think he's doing real well, thank God, was taking that new cancer drug. What did he tell us? It was $50,000 a treatment. Now, if it cost them $45,000 to come up with it, okay, fine. I want Kenny alive. I'll pay my share to 50. But if it cost them $100, Russell, we're not getting that back from China or Vietnam or any place. That is the hole in our system right now, both as a government that pays the Medicare and Medicaid to a certain extent, and in the individuals. I'm going to say the single biggest issue with people having problems with their credit card, not the people who get the credit card and go out and buy the boat and the furniture and wonder where the money's coming from. I'm talking about your emergency stuff is now either an auto repair or an emergency room visit. That's where the problem is. We need to start there. And yeah, we can fight with China in our spare time. It's not in Liechtenstein. It's not in Switzerland. It's not... This guy's convinced that's everything that our problem is. It's not, I don't think. I would not start there. Not that there isn't a problem a few places. I think there is. And you're more articulate about the China problem than anybody because you know more about it. Yeah, I put you on that subject. Russell, fix China. I mean, but the other stuff I think is way more important. I mean, I do. I honestly do.
Oh, I think there's a lot of domestic stuff that's very important, but... And I don't necessarily, you know how he goes about addressing that one. That's going to involve Congress, you know. And he doesn't have Congress on his side. He can only do things that involve, he can only do things that involve using executive orders, or things that you really just can't argue against. And when you start looking at domestic stuff, that's damn near impossible to get any consensus.
Well, the Democrats foolishly did a horse bleep job with Obamacare and not addressing cost, and they jammed it through a Congress when they had both houses of Congress without any sort of bipartisan stuff, which seems to have let the Republicans for the next maybe, 200 years have no solution on their own, just complain about Obamacare. Well, that's not a solution either.
No, it's not.
So somewhere, both sides got to go, wait a minute. And what did Carl say? Social Security, what are we collecting versus what we pay out? It's like we're collecting like 90%, some number up there. He knows it out of the top of his head. I'll ask him on Friday. But we're pretty close on Social Security. We're taking in on the Medicare part, not just individual people paying too much. On the Medicare part, I think what we pay in our payroll taxes in Medicare is only 40% of what's going out. That's a problem.
I mean, it's a huge problem.
We could fix Social Security we could add 0.2% of your salary and kick everybody up a year, and we're probably even or close. Maybe not that close, but we're that close. We're not even close on Medicare. And by the way, it doesn't even include Medicaid, and it doesn't include what you and I pay. So we're not even, I mean, I told you about the dude who was telling me about the Eliquis he's taken. His total bill last year for Eliquis, now he's on a Medicare Part D, $7,500 bucks. He paid $3,500 and Medicare paid $4,000. The cost to provide Eliquis to somebody for a year is like $50 or $40. We can't do that. We just can't do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of things are unsustainable. a lot of things, and we know that. And you know, and somebody's got to do something about it. And hopefully, you know, this administration that is not worried about getting reelected for sure, and the third term stuff. Please do not believe that.
Well, tell you what, the other Republicans are worried about it. The guys that are coming up and
Not worried about it.
You don't think the guys that are
so ludicrous? They're not worried about it. He says stuff like that just to get people fired.
No. I'm talking about, you don't think the Republican rep isn't worried about a year from January or November?
Oh, about that? Yeah, I would be concerned about that. I'd be totally concerned about that. I would be out there trying to explain things the best that you can.
By the way, you see this rally now? Something must have happened. We were down 100 and some.
I'm late to work.
All right, we're almost even now on the Nasdaq. Matter of fact, we just went positive on the Nasdaq.
Great.
How wild is that? All right, buddy, you take care. Are you here or are you in Indianapolis?
I'm down here. I'm on campus.
All right, good for you. Eh? Say hello to everybody. And someday, if you want me to go through my tariff thing, I'll see if I can find it for you. I might still have it.
No. Okay. Cool.
I actually got an A on it. Believe it or not.
Oh,
so I remember.
You say that like that's shocking.
Well, it might be shocking to most people that I ever got an A.
I'm not shocked at all.
All right, buddy. So take care of yourself. SP futures now down, only down 41. Nasdaq futures were just up 10. Now they're down 50. Like I said, this trading is pretty incredible. I'll be right back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.